Hello there, it's Matt here. Just wanted to let you know before the show starts that the news about Frank Lampard getting the commentary job broke just as we were finishing. So you'll hear our thoughts on that at the end of the show. Stick around then for Frank Talk, but your regularly scheduled programming starts now. What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast trying to find 50p for the Fratton Park meter. Coming up, Hull's Falters spend the end for Volta. There's championship winners and losers and much more besides. Powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL. And it's been a busy midweek in the Football League, and that is really what we're going to be focusing on today. It's pretty much a championship special for us, as you know. It's the FA Cup second round this weekend, so Tier 2 is where it's at by and large, although we will check in on a couple of League 1 teams as we go. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. As ever, I am joined by my two podcasting pals. Hello, Adrian Clark.
Hello. Yeah, great to be here. Yeah, I'm doing Kettering Doncaster, so I'll report back on Donny in the next pod.
Wow.
But yeah, we'll keep our powder dry on that.
Kettering, one of the big winners from round one, of course. Sam Parkin's back with us too. Sam, you've been all over the country following the Football League for the last few days. You must be glad to be broadcasting from home.
Yeah, I've managed to do my back in somewhere in between Burton and Derby. Your back garden, you two, you know that area. Very, very well. But despite the cold snap, it was an enjoyable couple of games and looking forward to filling you both in.
I've managed to do my back in between Burton and Derby. Might be the most middle-aged sentence I've heard this week, but we shall see. All right, before we get going, let me tell you that our partners, Quinbet, have a new offer for you. You can now get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35 minimum. Free bets plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account is up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus only and for new customers only. GamblerWare.org is the place to go to learn how to gamble responsibly. Okay, we're going to start today by talking about Hull City, who have sacked head coach Tim Walter after just 17 league games in charge. His side are in the championship relegation zone. The German replaced Liam Rossignol after the Tigers finished seventh last season. A lot of the focus here, Adrian, seems to be turning on the owner rather than the man who has departed, particularly because said owner told BBC Radio Humberside before the game against Sheffield Wednesday on Tuesday that he wasn't going to sack the manager.
Yeah, but look, the fans made their feelings known pretty loudly, and that is bound to have some kind of influence. But people will scoff and say, you know, what's he doing saying one thing and then doing the other just because the fans are giving the manager stick? But it's bound to have an influence, isn't it? It didn't look like it was going to turn, did it, really? I mean, first and foremost, the owner has had a stinker in his treatment of Liam Rossignol. I think we all recognised that at the time, that it was a ridiculously harsh dismissal, chasing the dream of more entertaining football. And it's backfired spectacularly, hasn't it? I was looking at some of the numbers, actually, comparing it. It's shocking, really. After 17 games last season, Hull had scored 24 goals. They've got 16 this time round. So, you know, they're more entertaining. They're conceding considerably more. Their average points tally is around half what it was this time last year under Liam Rossignol as well. At which point they'd, I think, won 7 and drawn 6, lost 4. This season it's 3-6-8. So you look, they've gone backwards. Walterball or Valterball just didn't work. Too risky, leaving themselves short at the back all the time. And I think once they lost their key wingers to injury, Bellumi and Miller, among others, that the threat diminished. Yet the style of play still left them open, and that ultimately did for Walter.
Is it a firefighter we're looking at coming in, Sam, do you think? I see that Mark Robbins is the early favourite. I wonder if that's just kind of lazy, last championship manager down, now free talk, whether he'd actually be interested in that. Steve Cooper, Stephen Schumacher, the next two in terms of the odds, or is this going to be a kind of, oh, here's a Borussia Dortmund's third team's 24-year-old. He's going to take charge for the rest of the season.
Probably on the fence a little bit. I'd probably go with the latter, just. I suppose Mark Robbins is the hot topic right now. And yeah, I could see it being a decent get for them. But would it be attractive to Mark Robbins when he's...
He's a holiday, Sam, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, good point. Good point. Not sure that he'd want to up sticks and potentially move up there right at this juncture. And he can probably afford to not be out of the game for a long period, but take a little bit of time. Yeah, I think if he's off the radar for a year or so, then maybe the moment will have gone, but he can potentially really take time over his next move. So I'm not sure really which way they go. I think, you know, I agree with everything Clarkey said, albeit I think Liam Rossignol had better players at the back end of last season, yet they weren't able to find that consistency which the owner craved given the budget and the calibre of player that he had there, especially in the attacking ranks. And I don't think they've really been replaced. So I think, you know, whoever is in charge of recruitment needs to take some criticism because he left him with, what, João Pedro, I think, and Bedia as your kind of two forwards. And they've obviously not contributed enough goals, despite the manager saying that they've been creating chances the last few weeks. That's been a continuing problem. Yes, the injuries to the wide boys. Zambrano, I suppose, was a bit of a shining light at times early part of the season. He's unavailable as well. So him and Bellumi were the ones that were looking like quite good additions and they've not been around. But I'm not sure who I read it off earlier, but 3 wins out of 25, I think, all comps, including friendlies, which I enjoyed. So he couldn't even beat... I don't even think of a team up there. Boston United, if they're still going.
North Ferriby was the one they always used to play, wasn't it?
North Ferriby, very good.
I've worked on 2 of their wins this season. I saw them smash Rangers and I saw them beat Hull City. Not Hull City, Stoke City. And with a phenomenal second half performance. So they needed to get me at the games more often. That's what they missed there.
Yeah, yeah, those 3 wins all came in a row, didn't they? And they scored plenty of goals during that time as well. But yeah, I mean, you just had to watch the defending for Sheffield Wednesday's second goal in midweek. And you could see that reorganisation at the back will be something high on the agenda of whoever comes in next. Now, when we were planning the show, we were thinking, oh, we're going to talk about Frank Lampard being the Coventry manager. We are recording at 9:21 on Thursday morning, and I've just checked the Coventry Twitter feed, and there is a delightful image of Sky Blue Sam, who is the elephant mascot, waving at some children on a big wheel in what I assume is Coventry Christmas market. So I don't think that he's got the job. So we'll just put a pin in that. And if it's happened by the time you listen to this, just assume that Sam said, it's an interesting appointment. They fancied a big name. And Adrian said he'll need to hit the ground running because he hasn't been in the championship for a fair few years. Championship, as I say, is our focus today. We're going to look at some winners and losers next. So I've asked the chaps to pick a couple of teams each. This is kind of based on what's happened midweek, but also a bit more generally as well. Sam, you can kick us off with a winner. You're going to go for Norwich City. My goodness me. We had Chris Gorham from Radio Norfolk on a couple of weeks ago talking about their stuttering form. They finished that stuttering style on Tuesday night.
Yeah, perfect opponents, I would suggest, at home when you haven't won since pretty much the last time I covered them, I think, in that 4-0 romp against aforementioned Hull City. So it's been a long time coming. I think, obviously, you know, huge mitigating circumstances in terms of the players that they've had absent and continuing to be missing, you know, some massive players for them. But I think Kenny McLean coming back in here, the performance of some of the fringe players in this game in particular, Marcondes, I think, 2 assists involved in the build-up for pretty much all of the goals, standout performance from him. Siannich as well, I think, deployed as the centre forward, which he's played wide invariably this season, but he looked the part all of a sudden as well. But I think the the returner, Kenny McLean, just nipped it together with and without the ball. So, yeah, really impressive, especially after being pegged back to 2-1. And I think that their dominance probably meant they should have gone in further in front. So there was a kind of a few scary moments, possibly. But, yeah, a resounding win. And when you consider the difficult run they've been on and the lack of points recently, they're still reasonably well placed. And, yeah, interesting to see Cordoba missing here, a little bit of a reconfigured back line. Stacey's had a little bit more game time. So, yeah, despite having to shuffle the pack and play some of the fringe players from earlier on in the season, a great win. I mean, a great win. But where are Argyle go from here? Hopefully Clarkie's going to fill us in.
Nice run of games for Norwich after this. Got Luton at home at the weekend, then QPR and Portsmouth. Before we get to Plymouth then, I wanted to get your opinion on this, Sam. It's not Tweet of the Week, but I noticed that Glenn Riddersholm, who is the assistant coach at Norwich, had quote tweeted Norwich's account, who said that was fun with the graphic of a six-time win. He said, a great is capitalised one, a yellow circle, green circle. Thanks for the support. Applause emoji, football emoji, hashtag OTBC. Now, he's been pretty quiet during the difficult run. Thoughts on an assistant manager tweeting? It's one of the rarer things that we see in football social media, I'd say.
I quite like On the Ball City. Mm. Very nice. I quite like that tune, actually. Yeah, I need it in front of me, really, Matt. It sounds like he's a bit heavy on the emojis. I kind of stop at two maximum. But I don't mind it. I can't believe I've just done 90 seconds or so on Norwich and I didn't mention that Science could be the best player that we've ever seen in the Championship right now. I mean,
I was thinking that.
What's he doing?
He's the new Viktor Gyökeres, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he's surpassing that, is he not? Surpassing that. It obviously reminds you, takes you to like Buendia, doesn't it, in terms of him being at Norwich. But, you know, Tarapt had that amazing season for QPR. I could probably roll out a few others, but this is just kind of unprecedented. It's insane numbers, 16 goal involvements in 17 games now, second hat-trick of the season. How many times is he going to cut and field and just whip balls in the far corner? And even when he's not on the score sheet, he's affecting things. He seems to be, you know, creating, or there was the own goal the other day where it was his little bit of quick feet which got him into position for a calamitous own goal to happen. So he is all over it at the moment. So I would presume that teams are going into games against Norwich having to, you know, really focus from now on how they stop him. Because if you stop him, especially with Sargent out and Nunez as well, that's half the job done maybe currently. But yeah, kind of ominous that the other chaps came in the other day and took the burden off him a little bit.
Yeah, so I saw Mike Shule, who covers a lot of the Norwich games. He's a Norwich supporter, does reports for TalkSport a minute. And I saw him this week and he had to interview Torup, the Norwich manager, and said, you know, what are you going to do with Science in January? You know, what are you worried about? It? He basically just said, I've got to lock him in a cupboard till the start of Feb. That's the only way through it. But they're going to probably have offers, aren't they? And it depends how ambitious they are in terms of possibly getting promoted this season, Norwich, as to whether they cash in or not. We've seen the likes of Blackburn Rovers miss out on big cash because they held firm and then didn't go up. So it's not as simple as, oh, you can't sell them because it will ruin your promotion dream, because we have seen examples where teams haven't gone up and then they've missed the boat in terms of cashing in on star assets. So it's, yeah, it could be some difficult decisions for Norwich City to make. Ben Napper at Carrow Road in January.
Yeah, and as Chris Gorham was telling us, this is their first year without parachute payment money as well, so that maybe changes things a little bit. On the other side of the ledger from Tuesday at Carrow Road were Plymouth, Adrian. This is what Wayne Rooney said. I could probably put the under-18 team out there and they wouldn't concede six goals, so I'm very disappointed, angry, frustrated, and the next 24, 48 hours are not going to be very nice for the players. goodness me. I only saw the goals from this game, but I didn't see many Plymouth defenders when I was watching the goals.
No, it was a bit of a mess, wasn't it? Without the ball, carved open way too easily. It's not like they didn't have, you know, enough defenders there. You know, they stuck with a sort of system that they used against Watford, where really Andre Gray bailed them out, didn't he, against Watford last Friday with two unbelievable goals. They're just a very open team, aren't they? They're not compact, and that is going to be an issue. they keep conceding first as well. It's the seventh time now in their last eight games where Argyle have gone behind. And if you go behind at championship level, it's not going to be easy, especially if you're Plymouth Argyle missing a whole bunch of your better forward players. You know, Whittaker can miss this one, Harding, a whole load of others as well. So you've got to go into these games, I think, and maybe adjust the way you play. I think you just have to if you're Plymouth Argyle. And that is something I think that Wayne Rooney hasn't done well enough this season in terms of he's kind of playing the same way, home and away, getting very, very different results. A few numbers. Plymouth have faced 24 more shots than anyone else in the Championship away from home. The division average in terms of shots faced this season on the road is 116. They've faced 189. You know, that's big. You know, they've conceded the most, 23. The XG against it reflects that. And at the other end, they've only scored three. So they've not even really carried a threat. The average goal scored on the road so far by Championship clubs is 9. Yeah, they've got 3. So yeah, the away form has to be sorted out. Otherwise, they will get relegated, because sooner or later the home results won't be as positive. The fans weren't happy, by the way. Obviously, a long journey. I think the team flew. I wonder how many of the supporters flew. But there's 461 of them, apparently, hardy souls. And there were a lot of sort of cries of, you're not fit to wear the shirt. So, yeah, great frustration with the travelling pilgrim army at the moment. I think they need to just be a little bit more defensive, if I'm honest, especially with when they've got key forwards missing.
Well, they go to Bristol City at the weekend and they can't buy a win at home at the moment. So maybe that'll be an opportunity for things to turn for them.
Yeah, I did. Just before we move on, I interviewed, hosted EFL All Access on TalkSport 2 this week, and we had Joe Edwards, the Plymouth captain, on. It was really good. He was on for the whole hour. So it was good to chat to him. He's a good talker. And yeah, one or two insights. It was quite... He did hint, really, that he loves Wayne Rooney. He said Wayne Rooney is the sort of man manager that is going out of the game, which I thought was fascinating. He's a very good people person. The lads do like him, and he's very personable and very popular with all the staff there. And he makes all the big decisions, but he did hint that really training and a lot of the tactics are kind of a collective effort with Pete Shuttleworth and Kevin Nanceville, very sort of important figures. So I think it's not just Wayne Rooney when it comes to what they're doing off the pitch. I also asked him about the poetry that Colin has... Have you seen this on I'm a Celebrity?
No. Nope. I've actually heard him talking about his poetry exploits previously somewhere. I was aware.
Yeah, I thought I might have heard that before. But anyway, Colin in the Jungle's been saying, yeah, when Wayne's bored on a Friday night at a hotel, he'll write her a love poem and bring it home, which I thought was quite cute, really. But yeah, Joe did confront his gaffer. He was quite brave and started to rib him about it. And there was no denial from Wazza. He is the poet. But yeah, there you go.
Watford, I don't know what you wanted to mention them, presumably so that you could both row back on your mockery of me for saying that they might get a playoff place this season.
I think I was somewhere on the fence, Matt, so that can't be directed at me. Well, I think just in the aftermath of seeing them at Home Park the other day, I know they didn't get the result, but I was really impressed. First time I'd seen them in the flesh. I think I've been, you know, really impressed with Tom Cleverley off the pitch in terms of the way that he's talking. I think he gives a great interview tactically, gives a lot more than the majority of managers. And he sounds so concise. He sounds like a gaffer, you know, already. Obviously, he's learnt from some very good ones during his playing career. But I've been really impressed with him, and I was impressed with his side. They've got a really nice balance. They play some good football. I love the front three. Chakvetadze, I think he's been a little bit off it maybe in the last couple of games, but he's obviously someone that can roam around. He goes quite deep in terms of his starting position, technical player. Bars, really quick. Electric. He was a big problem at home park. Again, probably he's not going to be able to stay in the team continually playing 90 minutes. So I may anticipate him coming out. And the most surprising thing was probably Bio, who I think his all-round game is very, very good. He misses opportunities, or he has been missing opportunities until this ridiculous purple patch. But the balance of that front three is really good. Looser in midfield, we know he's a good player. And I know that Clark, he spoke about Matty Pollock on the one of the previous podcasts. I mean, he is looking like an outstanding defender in terms of his ball playing ability. Hits a lovely raking kind of long ball for the aforementioned Bar or Bio. And he can defend as well. He's a tenacious so-and-so. So he's looking the part. And yeah, I really enjoyed their performance. Fast forward to Tuesday, one shot on target against the Bristol City side, who had enough chances to take something from this game, especially in the first half. There was a Naki Wells good opportunity. McNally, Twine hit one of his hurlers late on. I don't know if you saw that, but the old lack of backlift dipper from about 25 yards, which cannoned off the bar. So I think there's no doubt that Bristol City could have got something, but they met Backman on a really good night. He's obviously had his difficulties this season, and they found a way to win it through Ryan Andrews, the right wing back. They had Ebersele playing on the left on his wrong side. I think they were better when Larouchi came on, who made one of the assists at home park. So they've got good offensive wing backs as well. But I thought it was just, you know, a difficult game off the back of that disappointment where they conceded late in Devon. So to continue in the same vein at home continually week after week is really impressive. And to be sitting where they are, would have been easy to slip up in this game. And given the way it went, that was very possible. So I just thought a big win, good 4-point return from two tricky games against tough opponents.
Yeah, nice little run for them as well. QPR, Cardiff, Hull, their next three games. All right, that is Sam's latest winner. We'll find out Adrian's next. And it is, Adrian. Sheffield Wednesday, always love it when they play on a Tuesday. Their third win in four games. They made the short trip home from Hull, lugging 3 points behind them. I mean, my main reflection from this was how much I loved the commentator calling Josh Windass Dean for the penalty that he stuck away, which is exactly what I would have done had I had the mic for that game. But they're on a roll, as we said a lot last season, because that's their manager's name. Can you be more insightful about the Owls?
Oh, that's better than Windass, which I normally go for.
Windass. Before I get to the football, it looked to me as if Windass and Gassama or Masaba? I think one of those guys, they looked like they were wearing tracky bottoms or skins. but then on closer inspection, they were very long cycling shorts. So, I mean, I don't know, is that acceptable in the pro game on a cold night?
Shouldn't be. Not for me. I mean, if you're going to go Gabor Kirai, flappy tracky bottoms, fine for a goalkeeper, but no, you wear shorts if you're an outfielder.
I covered a game the other day, I can't remember, but the keeper had trackies on and it threw me. Obviously, I immediately went to Naughty's Crystal Palace, but if I place him before the end of the podcast, I'll come back to you.
It was Kassam, that,
even that's, I think that's unacceptable, isn't it? Keepers in trackies.
I think I can accept it with a keeper. I just think an outfield player, you just got to stick with the shorts and just take it, haven't you?
Gassama was born in Mauritania, which I don't know loads about, but I assume is probably a bit warmer than Hull in November.
I'd say so. But look, it was a good win. They started the game superbly. It's just good energy, good vibes with Danny Rowles, Sheffield Wednesday, isn't it? He hasn't got the strongest squad in a division, but what they will do is be quite intense. They'll work hard, they'll win the ball high up the pitch, and where possible, they're trying to attack you, aren't they? And they did that right from the off and should have scored a few, really. Hull were a bit of a mess. But Hull did grow into the game. After conceding a penalty, and then they had lots of chances, Hull. And the goalkeeper, James Beadle, who I've praised a lot on this podcast, particularly last season, had a bit of a blinder. There was one outstanding save, I think from Regan Slater from close range, that sort of kept the side in front. And I think that was a big moment in the game. He hasn't been as good this season. Cost his team three extra goals rather than sort of prevented additional ones. So he's not been at his best, but he was great in this game. tactically, they were sort of a 5-4-1 Sheffield Wednesday, but it looked like a 4-4-2 in possession. Paul Valentin, sort of the wing back, was really the winger. Windass came in off the right to play as a second centre forward. And then they actually changed it at half time, which was weird because they were winning the game. And then he made a double substitution. Smith and Musaba came on for Windass, who'd scored, and Ugbo. So he wasn't wholly happy, Danny Rowe. He was bemoaning poor finishing, saying that basically it was more stressful than it should have been. They should have put Hull out of sight. And that's probably a fair comment. I looked at their conversion rate because he keeps banging on about how bad they are at finishing. They rank 17th out of the 24. So he's kind of got a point. But there are a number of other teams that have been a little bit more wasteful than Wednesday so far this season. But yeah, good result for them. I think this season, if they get mid-table, Sheffield Wednesday, maybe just into top half, I think that represents a step forward.
Will it be enough to keep Danny Roll interested? That we shall see.
Good point.
That'll lead us nicely, Sam, into your first loser. You've gone for Derby County, just to pull up my heartstrings. They were beaten 2-1 at home to Swansea in front of the Sky cameras, and you were behind them. You were actually rather impressed, I think, with the Rams, but the bare facts are they won one game in their last eight, which would qualify them for this particular category.
Yeah, considering I've had 3 hours sleep, I thought this was the safe bet, considering I watched them all but a few hours ago. I think in the context of the game, the fixture, Swansea beaten obviously by Leeds, heartbreaking fashion at the weekend, given where they sat in the league, and Swansea's relative woes on the road, where they've only won once this season, it's obviously a really winnable game for Derby coming into it. And when you consider that their home form's been pretty good, too many draws granted, but pretty good. And I thought that it was a really bold selection from Paul Warne. Six changes. He's been playing with, away from home, three centre-halves. It's invariably changed to a four at home, and that's the way he went last night. But it was the personnel, the skill set of his midfield players and front players that caught me a little bit off guard. He's had Ben Osborne, he's had Liam Thompson in there. Obviously, David Ozo earlier in the season. Ebu Adams was available for this one and did really well, particularly in the second half, but had loads of pace, loads of creativity, the things that you probably wouldn't associate with Derby's team so far this season, all in there from the off. Mendes Lang, Blackett Taylor, Hoodmine and Harness as 10s, as 8s, and Caden Jackson down the middle. So it didn't have the real feel of a Paul Warne Championship Derby side this season, if you like. And for half an hour, they couldn't get the ball. It was incredible. And I actually said during the commentary, it reminded me of a few of my games against Swansea. It's probably something that you've heard a lot on this podcast, but I remember just, you know, I'd been passed off the pitch by them in their infancy of this, this kind of philosophy that's run through them over the last couple of decades. And you're just scratching your head, really, and you're thinking, it looked like they've got an extra man out there. They couldn't get anywhere near Grimes. It looked to me that the press was just not coming early enough. They were too deep, you know, probably the back line and then the midfield four, and it was Harness and Jackson that were trying to apply the pressure when it came, but it was just all a little bit too late. It was a little bit lethargic. And then you know what the fans are like when the team's popping it around. Just the moans and groans started, and Swansea were two goals to the good at this stage. So it was a really tough opening 20, 25 minutes. But from that moment on, Derby far and away the better side. The intensity changed, the aggression, that line went higher, especially in the second half. They started nicking the ball off Swansea, putting copious amounts of balls into the box. And had the first goal come a little bit sooner, we could be talking about a brilliant comeback this morning. Jackson passed up a golden chance at 2-0. And they only had a penalty from Mendes Lang to show for all their efforts. But Paul Warne was really boisterous and buoyant in his post-match. I think it was far and away their highest XG of the season. I think Swansea's, don't quote me on this, was like 0.25 or something against like four. Vipotnik scored an unbelievable goal. And then Liam Cullen, who was playing as a 10 last night for Swansea, provided the pass for Renault to get their second. But they only had one other attempt after that through Liam Cullen. It really was one-way traffic. Couldn't get out. And I said it again during the commentary, and it's not particularly scientific, but football is crazy like that. I mean, how many times do you see a team at all levels absolutely bop the living daylights out of a team where they can't get a touch. And then the contrast in the second half is enormous. I mean, what is that, Clarkey? Is it psychological when you got the two goal advantage? Is it the crowd? Is it the other team tailing off? I think it's maybe difficult for Swansea to play in that manner for 90 minutes. And I think the statistics show, I think they've only scored four goals in second halves this season. Right. And they concede a lot late. I think if you're maybe the Southampton stats would be similar, at times under Russell Martin. I think it's hard to have that control when you're maybe not talking about the elite of the elite over a 90-minute course.
It's hard work keeping the ball. You know, you got to move around a lot, haven't you? You got players that are rotating positions, that are supporting one another. And if you're in a position of strength, then maybe subconsciously players do slack off in that regard. All of a sudden, especially after half time, you get cold, you come back out for the second half, and it just nothing feels the same. And obviously, the other team are revved up, aren't they, to get stuck in and to basically knock you out of your rhythm. And teams have to put up with that. It's very rare that it happened with Arsenal, actually, midweek. Arsenal were popping it around all day long against Sporting. It was brilliant performance. First 15 in the second half, just didn't look anywhere near the same. They got it back, thankfully, but it's very common, very common indeed. But yes, yeah, so teams like Swansea need to strike early on in games, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, it was a peculiar night. Obviously I've got them down as the losers. I think circumstantial in terms of their opportunity to take maximum points here. But I think the bigger picture is that in comparison to Pompey and obviously Oxford, Paul Warren's done pretty well to get them into this position. And given the level of the performance, I wouldn't be overly worried. A standout player, Eric Cashin. I don't know how much we've spoken about him this season, but his distribution is really eye-catching. The beautiful left-footed kind of long searching passes, normally finding their target. He comes out with the ball beautifully, tenacious, strong in the tackle. But the natives left unhappy, but I would be more critical probably about the Derby Town planner, those roundabouts. Oh my goodness.
All right, you pulled it back a little bit there, but there was a bit too much praise for Derby County for my taste. So that was Sam's Wednesday night. Clarkie, you were on hand to see Blackburn and a 1-0 win against Borough at the Riverside. I mean, it was a lovely team goal that won it, finished off by Dom Hyam. But I sort of wonder if keeping a clean sheet against Borough is as impressive as scoring a goal like that, given the form they'd shown coming into the game.
Definitely. Yeah, it was unexpected. I think the goal might have been offside in retrospect. It looked like he just strayed. So it may be a slight bit of fortune, but it's beautifully constructed. The clean sheet was seriously impressive because Borough have been on fire. There's a bit of context here, obviously, that the entire central midfield were missing. Hayden Hackney and Morris, Aidan Morris, were both out. Riley McGree had to come off after 20 minutes. He might have been sent off, in fairness, for a bad tackle. He sort of injured himself in the process. Finn Azaz was unwell. They've had sort of illness sweeping the camp. So they were depleted, Borough. But even so, I was really impressed with Blackburn Rovers' resilience and the shape and the defensive organisation and some of their football as well, which was pretty neat and tidy going through the lines. They were the better team on the night. In the first half, they were definitely the better side. Tyrese Tolan, I mean, I know he's not big, but he's had a gilt-edged opportunity. Free header, about 4 yards out for a peach of a cross from Tronstad. And I mean, he must have closed his eyes. It was one of my efforts. Second half, it was all Borough. But very little sort of clear-cut opportunities created. And then Cantwell has a goal disallowed on the break for offside. And then Cantwell's heavily involved in the winner. Beautiful little around the corner flick to Owen Beck, whose middle name is Michael. What do we think? it's got to be named after Michael Owen, hasn't he? Owen Michael Beck. But a little back flick for the 1-2. Cantwell squares it and Dom Hyam pops up to get himself the winner. So yeah, it was good scenes for Blackburn. It was a dog of a game. it was not good entertainment. So yeah, big pluses for Rovers was obviously the defensive organisation. Hyam was great. Danny Bart was great. Callum Britton, terrific at right back. Tucking in field, made a lot of clearances. He was practically a third centre back. What I worry about with him, and what I just think John Eustace must wish, is that he had a quick striker, you know, someone like Sammy Smodic, you know, someone that's going to stretch a team. Because Ahashi is a good little footballer, but he comes short all the time. Cantwell's, you know, we know what sort of player he is. Dolan, Hedges don't really have a proper striker. And if they had one, it'd be a really good team because they know they do know how to defend Blackburn Rovers. So well played to them here. Slightly lucky to, that the goal was awarded, I guess. But on the balance, I think they deserved it.
Yeah, big game against Leeds at Ewood Park for them on Saturday after picking up successive wins on the road. Now, if I was going to chuck in a bonus winner, it would obviously be QPR, seeing as they hadn't picked up 3 points since August. They did that at Cardiff. Sam, you've got Cardiff pegged as the loser. Omar Rizzo, we were saying, you know, maybe he's going to get the gig full time. He now says, everyone thinks I've got to win every game, and that's how I'm feeling. It's stressful. I would suggest they need some resolution one way or another, managerially, if they are to start pulling away from their current perilous position near the bottom of the table.
Yeah, I think just shows you how quickly things can change, how pressurised the role is, and how the standards are just so high that managers have to try and maintain over such a long period, especially with the difficulty you face in the Championship, the amount of games, obviously in the infancy of this role, and it's all gone a little bit pear-shaped, hasn't it, in the last four games. I saw them at Luton at the start of this difficult period and, you know, wasn't really impressed with them in terms of what they were doing going towards the opposition's goal. And I think that's, you know, kind of been in keeping with the season, hasn't it? If you think they've only scored 15 goals and five of them came against Argyle at home, that's 10 in the other 17 games. Failed to score in eight, which is the most in the division. And yes, I was enthused about probably some of the attacking players that they brought in, but nobody has shown anywhere near the required level of form. You're talking about Kanga, Mate, Willock, obviously Tanner and Robinson were there previously, the guys that have chipped in with seven, Bettine and Robinson with five. So he's been a bit of a one-man band, really, you know, in the goal-scoring stakes. And I think that was really evident last night. Nobody to finish off the chances, despite Paul Nardi, who's been a bit of a shining light for QPR, making eight saves, I think, which is quite unprecedented. You never really see those type of numbers. But the majority, I think I'd have saved maybe two that were kind of stand out. But yeah, Cardiff have not worked him hard enough, or have not been able to convert some decent opportunities they made. So it's hard to see, I think, him getting the gig in all reality. You know, that feels a little bit harsh saying that out loud, but obviously I just think, you know, you think about the ownership, what it's been previously, and where they are, and the fact that they've lost at home to a team that have won one game prior to last night. Incredible seeing Salah do that after the starts of the season he's had, and obviously
that little dink. I mean, there's some confidence there when you haven't scored for ages and ages to just
amazing
one of those.
Incredible what getting on the score sheet does for him. And I wasn't aware of this, but I heard it somewhere. Supposedly they put the goal celebration music on by mistake when he missed the penalty the other day, which is just genius. If they couldn't rub more salt in the wound, that's just astonishing. So I've been there. I'm not sure I've gone to a new club and had that period of time without scoring, but I've certainly, there was a time at Luton late in Orient where I went about 20-25 games without getting a goal. And I don't know, I can't remember exactly how I was feeling, but I would suggest that Salah wouldn't have been feeling great Sunday and Monday morning. So those goals Tuesday morning, those goals on Wednesday, most welcome for them. And we'll see how QPR go. I fancied them last night. I said as much to a few other people. So there was a few emojis sent on the old WhatsApp last night. Told you so. Told you so.
First of many, Marty Cifuentes will certainly hope. Now, if I was going to do a bonus loser, it would definitely be Portsmouth. How you get a game called off at 11 o'clock in the morning when you're travelling literally from one end of the country to the other does not reflect well on the authorities. And then they couldn't get the power on for the match against Millwall at Fratton Park on Wednesday night, and that one bit the dust too. But it's another promoted side, Clarkie, you're going to finish us off with. Oxford United, no disgrace in losing at Sheffield United. Most teams do, but it's just continued the pattern, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's getting a little bit out of control, but they're losing a bit of control, aren't they? Oxford had a tough run of games, in fairness. I think Watford and Borough and now Sheffield United, you know, they've got really good forward lines, and they did expose a defence that really contains most of the guys that were in League One and that weren't necessarily expected to come up from League One either. So it's been quite chastening. I mean, Sheffield United opened them up at will, really. You know, gaps between the centre halves, even when they've sort of got players behind the ball, good teams like the Blades will still carve them open. It was a lovely goal from it. Lovely take from Rakitić. I don't know if you've seen it. Beautiful little slip pass through the middle of the box, which was the case for another one of their goals as well. Right through the middle, he takes it on the back foot, and then 1v1, it's a really accomplished finish from Rakitić, who's on fire at the moment. So, no, I think you're right. It's no disgrace, but watching that and seeing some of the goals they've conceded of late, I almost feel like they might need to just tweak their approach a little bit. Maybe attack is the best form of defence, because if you're going to sit back and soak it up, you might need stronger personnel. I don't know. So yeah, maybe fight fire with fire, because they can create chances at Oxford, especially with the likes of Goodrum and Rodriguez and players like that. They've got good wingers that they brought in the summer. So maybe attack's the best form of defence. They have dabbled with three at the back, which I think is really interesting. He was 4-1-4-1, wasn't he, Des Buckingham, pretty much all the time. Nice and aggressive. Very much a sort of counter-attacking side. You know, win the ball back, bang, we'll hit you hard and fast. But yeah, 3-4-3 or 3-4-2-1 has crept in over the last few games. I think they had that for a period in this match as well. So maybe a little bit of tactical involvement going on at Oxford as they look to sort of stabilise this losing run. I certainly think if they carry on and don't change things, they will tumble towards the relegation zone. So I think that's wise from Buckingham to have a look at other ways.
Yeah, three defeats in a row for them now. They've got Millwall at home, then they go to Plymouth and QPR. Okay, well, that is the Championship done. When we come back, Sam's going to tell us a little bit about the League One game he saw this week. Oh, dear, dear, it's not looking very good at all for Burton Albion, is it, Sam? Beaten at home by Charlton in front of you. Just looking at the stats, looked pretty even in terms of possession, but the fact that Charlton had 24 shots and Burton managed just one on target, was that all down to Charlie Webster's red card midway through the second half changing things? The goal didn't come till late, or was this another limp Burton performance?
Yeah, I would say so. Charlton were the better team, 11v11, albeit Nathan Jones, I think, changed the approach to a degree. I think they're quite direct, Charlton. And I think me and Clarkey, when we saw them early part of the season, there was a definite lack of creativity and craft in the midfield in particular. And that's definitely still prevalent. However, he managed to get Miles Lieber and Matty Godden and Ghassan Ahadmi in the same team. Godden played at the tip of the diamond. We know Nathan Jones has been a big advocate of that shape over the years. With great success at Luton. He's got half the Luton team as well, so it shouldn't be too much of a problem there. But yeah, interesting, Godden, and he did well in the first half. Clever, because he's not going to really go past people, Godden, but in terms of trying to release Leeburn and Ahadmi and knitting it together, he didn't do bad. Very direct. If I had a pound for every kind of clipped diagonal that Gillespie and Alex Mitchell produced during the game, I'd be a very wealthy man this morning, because they were incredibly direct. And you're going to hit them, aren't you, when you got, I would suggest, what, Leeburn's probably 6'3". Ahadmi's over 6 foot. So it was second balls, putting them under pressure. And those two weren't brilliant, but probably had created enough chances prior to them finding the goal. And obviously that was mitigating circumstances. Charlie Webster, who I've interviewed when he was at Chelsea, lovely young man. God, you talk about the red mist descending. I don't know if you two have seen it, but it was Terry Taylor, the substitute, who just yanked him back inside his own half. Charlie Webster, who's trying to start a counter-attack, Webster's just lost it and just kind of bounced into him. I'm not sure how much of his face he got. It was kind of a bit of a bump. He might have, you know, collided with his grid, but it was a red card, and he was so upset, Charlie Webster. I just don't know what happened. Maybe circumstantially, like, you know, they're not winning games. They're at a really low ebb, and maybe that just affected him in the moment. But oh, he was distraught. Wanted to go and give him a cuddle. But, you know, ultimately that did cost them, because Charlton continued to knock on the door, changed the shape, went back to his 3-5-2, introduced a few substitutes, and they get the winning goal through
Coventry, I think it was. I had to look that one up there. It was a bit of a scramble. Thierry Small got in on the left hand side. Goalkeeper Crocombe made a couple of saves and he was able to force it in. So much deserved. What else can I tell you about the night? I mean, watching Nathan Jones from 10 foot away. Oh, I mean, unbelievable. And, you know, there was only...
Worse than Pep Guardiola?
Oh my God. He's kicking every ball. He's biting every fingernail. He is incessant. And the thing was as well that you could hear every word. You know, obviously it was very cold. Supporters hadn't come out in force, shall we say. There was no problem getting a car park space. Yeah, he was very animated. You could hear everything. And I was like, oh, the two centre forwards are going to get absolutely hammered at halftime. Like, there was a few where Ahadmay gave it away. And I was like, talking from experience here, the centre forwards getting it. You know, if I, again, had money every time someone said, get hold of it to me, I want it on my tombstone. You know, the amount of, it's so easy, isn't it, Clarkie, for a player to smash it at your neck and you give it away and say, get hold of it. There was loads of that going on from the Charlton staff. So I felt for them. And then the second half, they did start with a bit more impetus, those two front players in particular. But I had me only lasted about an hour. But yeah, that, I mean, that was fascinating. And yeah, Burton, obviously I'm not that au fait with their interim manager, Tom Hounsell, but they try to play a little bit more than Charlton. But in essence, they're a bit of a counter-attacking team. Webster probably looked like their player with the most guile and the most likely to craft something. But Kalinauskas on the left-hand side, a Lithuanian lad, is a flyer. So when they are able to release him, he can get them up the pitch really quickly. But Dan Orsi was anonymous. So he was the one bright spark. Kalinauskas, he's got a few goals and he brought one massive save off Maynard Brewer in the second half, which was their only shot on goal. So yeah, they need a new manager. They need a new voice. They need some motivation. They need some organisation. It's a season which is looking like it's only going to end one way for them. But for Charlton, they just got to beat Crawley next time out. Otherwise, it's pretty meaningless, isn't it, going on winning this game that you're expected to beat. So if they don't back it up against Crawley, I don't think the pressure on Nathan Jones will subside anytime soon. But it sounds like he's got the backing, and rightly so, because there is no point in that club changing manager again. I mean, what would be the point? He needs a window, he needs the season, and see if they can have some growth.
They're 5 points off the playoffs, but they do have a game in hand. Still just the one win from 16 in the league for Burton Albion. Now then, Adrian Clark, you must have been feeling very pleased with yourself on Saturday night, because last week's predictions went rather well for you. You got 4 points. Sam only got one. I didn't get any. So you've closed the gap.
But what was sweeter was that Sam on the WhatsApp group gloated, because he thought he'd said it would be Bolton 2, Blackpool 1.
Oh, no, I just asked the question. No. Listen, mate, I can't even see you from where I am at the summit, so don't start giving it large.
You give it the old eyes emoji, you know, as if, like, you got your cigar out, that you've nailed it yet again. And I just sat on it. I sat on it for a while until Matt sort of broke you the news. And I found that very funny.
I'd had 3 points of Guinness. Nothing was going to dampen my Saturday evening mood. Even your 3-point cutting of the deficit.
So what are we looking at now then?
Yeah, scores are 32 to Sam, 25 to me, breathing down his neck. And you're on 17, Matt. So still a lot of work for you to do.
Poised to make a remarkable comeback. And it starts this week with Watford QPR. And I'm going to go first because, damn it, I need to find some way to get some sort of advantage here. Watford always win at home, but QPR won in midweek. Tight, close sport thing, this one, but the Hornets edge it 2-1 for me. How about you, Adrian?
3-0 Watford.
Wow.
I don't think QPR can do it two games in a row.
Head or heart, Sam? This is a tough one for you, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm getting complacent. I've not even looked at these fixtures pre-coming on here. What did you say, Matt?
I said 2-1 to Watford.
Ooh. Reluctantly, I'll take the... What did you say, Clarkey?
3-0.
Reluctantly, I'll take the 1-0 Watford.
Okay, backing against your own team. Sam, what about Stoke Burnley? Has the potential to be quite bad, I would suggest.
Stoke Burnley, would I
It's not going to go. This is going to feature all. Two goals or less. Surely.
Would I want to be at any other game than this in the Championship this weekend? Possibly so. Maybe not Middlesbrough Hull after what Clarkie critiqued Borough on.
Poor old Stoke. I was thinking that when I saw 0-0 against Preston in the week. I thought, is there a less appealing game in football this week than Stoke 0, Preston 0? Probably not. Anyway, what are they going to do against Burnley?
Well, Burnley are going to win 1-0.
I think that's probably the shout, Adrian.
Yeah, it's definitely the shout. I'm going to give them a 2-0.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably what I would have gone for after 1-0.
I'm so conservative in these predictions. Have you two noticed? I'm just playing like poor draws and 1-0s.
I'm going 0-0. Second 0-0 of the week at the Bet365. Oxford versus Millwall to finish us off then. What do you reckon, Clarkie? Can Oxford get the win they need? Will Millwall benefit from having gone all the way down to Portsmouth in midweek and then coming all the way back again, having not actually kicked a ball?
I think it's an advantage, having a little breather. We saw it with Blackburn. They had a rest at the weekend and came back and won at Borough. I think Millwall can go to the Kassam and win, but I don't see a lot of goals in this game. There don't tend to be loads in Millwall matches. I go Oxford 0, Millwall 1.
Sam?
Because it worked for me a fortnight ago. Stinks of 1-1.
All right. I'm going to say 1-0
to Oxford. It does stink of 1-0, yeah.
Just to mix it up a bit, I'll go 1-1. We'll see how we get on.
Hang on.
What? Oh, sorry. 1-0 to Oxford. This is where the momentum turns for me and them this weekend. So 1-0, 0-1, 1-1. Very binary, all of that. Before we get to our tweet of the week, let me remind you that our partners, Quinbet, have a new offer for you. You can now get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35, minimum 3 bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account is up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on how to bet responsibly. All right, tweet of the week before we finish. We are at EFL What The on X. By the way, I should say, leave us a nice review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. That would help us out a lot, please. Our tweet comes from Richard Kone of Wickham, who are on quite the run at the moment. And Richard Kone says, what a night. Team spirit at Luke Leahy, the man. Option year triggered, winning mentality, home ground on fire. What else can I ask? We go again Saturday. All caps, up the chair, boys, and two blue heart emojis, along with pictures of he and his teammates celebrating their position at the summit of League One following their latest victory against Mansfield, which came courtesy of Leahy's stoppage time winner. Sam, I think you can probably guess that I've chosen this because I think this is the first time we've ever had a footballer's tweet that includes the phrase option year triggered.
You can't not love it. I mean, it's magnificent. Is it Luke Leahy that's got the year, or is it Richard Kone? I don't know.
It is Kone.
Is it? Yeah. I like that this is normally your job here, Matt, but Hursty Games of QPR persuasion has done a come to us plea.
Wow.
Not a come and get me plea. We need a goal scorer at QPR. So I'd echo that. Why did he sign the year? Or why did he trigger it? Disappointing.
Wickham, Mexico. Also getting involved, they enjoyed it too. They've got 1,130 followers. They just said, what a team. I mean, it is an exceptional run that they've been on. But I think, Clark, it is also
the best team in the country.
10 wins in a row, can't argue with it.
Yeah, we need to speak about Wickham a little bit more. Maybe we need to do scouting report or do a bit of a focus on them maybe next time, because they are on an incredible run. It's a great tweet. It's a lot to unpack, obviously, there. He's just sort of spat it all out, hasn't he, in one sentence. That I just think it's a crying shame that it got four replies. Yeah, no, he deserves more than that. He's got 9 this season. Richard Kone, one of the best pieces of scouting that we've had in recent years, potentially. Mm. Essex Senior League at the start of last season for Newham Athletic. And look at him ripping it up in League One. So well done him, well done Wickham. But come on, Wickham fans, get following this guy and engage with him. 4 replies.
I mean, if I was being harsh, I would say that there are things he can do to up his follower base. His header picture is in the wrong perspective, so it's horizontal and it should be vertical. And also his bio says he's engaged to Instagram, and then a link to the account of the person who he's presumably engaged to, and that account does not exist when you click on it. So a few little basics.
Man after my own heart on the social media.
Well, look, if he's triggered the 1 year option, it means that he's got a bit more job security, therefore a bit more time on his hands to sort out his social media profiles. You could say the same for us, maybe, if you were being harsh. What is for sure is that we'll be back next week with another show. That is going to wrap things up for today. Hope you enjoyed the Championship special. I hope you enjoy the football this weekend too. We'll be back with you next week. Bye for now. Oh, so I said enjoy the football and we'd all wrapped up. Everything was great. And then, of course, literally 1 minute after we hit record, Frank Lampard is appointed as the head coach of Coventry City. So I made up what you two would probably say. We don't have to do that now. Sam, no surprise, he's got Joe Edwards and Chris Jones with him. They were there at his previous jobs, particularly Chelsea. How's he going to do then? Back in the Championship. It's a big, big job for him, and it's a risky appointment for Coventry.
I think it's difficult not to like Frank Lampard. So I hope it goes really well for him. And I think now the dust has settled, the supporters will get on board. I'm not sure I buy fully into that he's replacing a really popular manager, so he's got to hit the ground running. I think that football supporters get behind the manager at any club. And yeah, there's so much good feeling towards Mark Robbins, and rightly so. I mean, it's been astonishing, some of his achievements, but it's a new era now. But the jury is out, obviously, on him as a manager. I think there's no doubt that takes a real interest. Joe Edwards will as well, working and improving the younger players. And I think they have really cut the average age, signed young players, something we spoke about a few weeks ago, all under 25, I think, the players brought in the summer. So that's somewhere where he can focus. And they have a decent squad there in Truve. I've seen them recently. And they were good. They're easy on the eye. They got some good players. So the potential is there to really improve their results. So I see it as a good get. Bit of a gamble for Lampard, because got to go well. That's something that you put on us a few times, Matt. This is the last opportunity. I think given his stature in the game, if he wants to manage, he'll continue getting gigs. But in this country, he's got to probably go some way to emulating what he did at Derby, which was a pretty good job.
And what he did at Derby, Clarke, was make really good use of his contacts in the loan market. Mason Mount, Fikayo Tomori, Harry Wilson, all integral to that Derby team. I bet you that he gets Harvey Vale on loan from Chelsea in January. That is an absolute stick-on. But you think that that's an avenue he's going to explore in terms of the January market. But more immediately, what a game to start with. Cardiff at home. Yes, please.
Look, these advanced talks might have been with that in mind. Seriously. I mean, Burnley away? Nah, you're right.
Sheffield United, Sunderland.
Yeah, I think Frank's smart. Well, we know he's smart. I'm with Sam. Look, would I have appointed him? Maybe not. I would have gone maybe down the Ruud van Nistelrooy route or Lee Carsley, one of those two, in preference. But I really wish him well, because like Wayne Rooney, he doesn't need it. He doesn't need the hassle, but he's passionate about it. He wants to be a success. And, you know, he's moving around different parts of the country to fulfill his dream of being a successful manager. So I give him a lot of credit. And Sam's right. I think he's got the job, A, because he's Frank Lampard, but B, because he's really good at working with young players. That first season at Chelsea actually was fantastic. You know, cup final, and top four with no
transfer embargo.
Yeah, no transfers allowed. He had to blood the kids, and he did really well. At Derby, he used the loan market brilliantly. Those players you mentioned, look where they are now. You know, he had a good eye for talent. It was Everton's a tough gig. And you know, so not maybe surprised it went badly there. And Chelsea last season were an absolute mess. So actually, even though the jury is absolutely out on him, he might just be better than we all think. And I hope it. I hope he succeeds at Coventry City, where I think he will get the best out of the young players, certainly in the short term.
Well, good luck to him. 2.5 year deal. He signed, right. I don't care what happens next. Neil Warnock could kick out Daniel Farker and become Leeds manager in a move that nobody saw coming. We're not continuing the podcast. This is the end of it. I mean it this time. Goodbye. We'll see you again next week.